Welcome to part two of our conversation with Nolan Emerson about digging into the dead. Let's talk about, I want to hear about the investigation. Did you have the knowledge, I guess, I'm guessing timetable-wise, when you went to the Conjuring House, did you begin digging more into the Perrin family story after the investigation, or did you have that sort of knowledge going in?
No, I'm the type who likes to know going in, so I can, I know there's certain investigators that like to go in blind, and then, because I can see that perspective of not wanting to know and going in unbiased, but I'm the type who likes to go in with questions that I want answered.
Sure.
So I started looking into that beforehand.
Sure. That makes sense. Andrea has been on our show multiple times, and she's actually a friend of mine, and very genuine human being. And just,
yes, I can tell.
Some of the most compelling stories ever from her. So you get there, you're going for the investigation. This is obviously a place of a great interest at this moment in time. Tell me what it was like when you got there and walking through that door and how things progressed.
Well, in fact, it started beforehand. It started a couple days before. We started having car problems. Like, we had this car, it was all planned out, it was in great shape. And to take to Western New York, which is about 8 hours to Rhode Island. And all of a sudden the wheel bearing went. And of course that could be just one of those coincidences, but they kept reoccurring throughout the investigation. So it was a pain in the ass. You know, we spent hundreds of dollars just trying to get that fixed. We go out there as soon as we're pulling up to the house. And I had a team member who backed out last second, said, I can't make it, out of nowhere. And it like this whole thing was like, kind of like, what are we in store for? We've had weird things happen leading up to places.
Yeah.
And we're like, okay, this can be a sign that, you know, something's going to happen. Maybe something's trying to prevent us from going there. Like, there's a bunch of things that run through your mind. Sure. In that moment. And, but we finally get out there and we go and we meet the owners, Corey and Jennifer Heinzen, who are awesome people. I don't know if you've talked to them, but they are awesome people. We go inside the house and you can feel kind of that same feeling I described at the Hinsdale house when I first walked in. I kind of had that vibe immediately. And we did the walkthrough tour of the house, which we couldn't film. And I mentioned that because that comes into play later. And then we finally do a sit down interview with Corey, and that's when the activity started. So it was right away, like within the first half hour, activity was already starting to, you know, they were watching us.
Yeah. Tell me about the activity that you started to experience.
Well, we were sitting there talking to Corey, and we were talking about Bathsheba. You know, there's a lot of legend to her, whether how much of that part of the story is true. And as soon as we were talking about her, we were hearing just footsteps and knocking would happen. And Corey saw a shadow pass from the doorway of the dining room and the kitchen right there. And the vibe was just, the goosebumps were coming, like, okay, there's something around us. So whenever that was mentioned, that's when the activity started. I don't know how much that comes in.
Yeah.
I mean, Corey had a good point.
Go ahead.
Corey had a good point when we were talking, is like, okay, people come in here with that mindset that there's a Bathsheba and that she did all these horrible things. And through that energy, you can kind of manifest the activity that comes forward. So you want to try and avoid that. So that was a good point by him. And we tried to go away from saying that, and like, kind of, I guess, I don't know if the summoning's the right word, but talking to a spirit named Bathsheba in that context. context.
It's an interesting thought, and it's one that I've discussed quite a bit in the last year on this show, because there's a lot of question about the Bathsheba character of legitimacy of, you know, was there one? You know, what do you know factually, and what do you believe about that character? That obviously was portrayed one way in the movie, but in terms of reality, your thoughts?
Well, from what I can say, I can only really go based on the facts. And the facts is that there was this Bathsheba Sherman was a person, but there is no record. There's no town record of her doing any of those sort of things that have been claimed that she does. Doesn't mean it's not true, but just, and I don't know if that's changed of lately, since I've been to the house, because I haven't, you know, dug much deeper into the house since then.
Sure.
But from what I was learning back then, and I don't think that whatever's there is an evil witch named Bathsheba. I don't believe that.
Mm-hmm. What's your thoughts on the idea, though, of, okay, this person, you know, existed as a living being, but, you know, how much of the lore about her is true is, you know, that's what's really up for debate. But the idea, though, that people can go in and many go in without educating themselves on facts or anything like that, and they just have a preconceived notion of what something is. And if that, mm-hmm. if that notion is negative about something, I mean, it could be a completely made up character in theory as well.
Exactly.
Someone that never lived. What are your thoughts on that? Of just the kind of the collective energy in a repeated location of that actually, you know, creating something of its own.
That's a really good question. And from my experience of the Conjuring House, there is something, I don't want to say evil, but there's something that's a little more on the darker side from what we experience. I think the mind is a powerful thing, and it can project and alter some things that in its nature are not dark, but, you know, your perception is reality. So if you perceive it as dark, you're going to carry on that story, and that's how rumors spread. So I think there is something there, and I think whatever it is, or he or she, it could be very human, I'm not sure, will take on the form of whatever you want it to be. If you want that thing to be Bathsheba, that's what it is. If it's not Bathsheba, that's not what it is. In fact, the morning we were there, the morning of our night number two at the Conjuring House, a psychic medium told Corey, and we didn't find this out till after the fact, that something is reawakening in that house, and that he needs to be careful. And that was when we were there, and that's what led up to everything crazy that happened to us on the second night. I think part of it, I don't know, man, that's a solid question. That's a hard question to answer. And I guess it's just one you got to try and seek out if you can, how much of it is just mental and like your own mentality, and how much of it is actually, no, that's what it is. So that's a solid question.
It's one of those things I wonder about, too, where, you know, you could call it whatever you want. It just knows that, okay, someone is trying to communicate with me. They don't know who I am, but I can't really express to them who I am either. So you can call me Scooby-Doo for all I care.
Right, exactly.
I'll try and make myself known. That's what I kind of wonder about, too. It's not necessarily taking the form of something because we gave it that name. It's just like, look, you're trying to communicate with me. That's my cue. You're always wrong on my name, but it's my name.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know,
that could be why it's so pissed, you know, like, no, yeah. That's not my name. What do you?
Yeah. I mean, it's like at some point someone's got to figure out who this is. And that's an interesting thing with that house. I mean, Andrea said, you know, there's very likely multiple things that are there. You know, mm-hmm. you spent a couple nights there, probably not enough to really, you know, get a sense of what it is if you had lived there. But what's, you know, your opinion based on your experiences and what you've heard from others who've investigated there now, do you think there's multiple things going on in that house?
I do. And our experience, again, like I haven't been there in, what is it now, a year and a half, so it could have very well changed at this point. But when we were there in January of 2020, right before the whole pandemic started, here's the crazy story of this house. And this, by the way, is all documented on our YouTube, Pitch Black Paranormal on YouTube, if you guys want to watch the whole documentary. The second night, you know, the activity on the first night, we ended with the Ouija board, like I was talking about earlier, had some strange feelings, had a couple of intelligent responses, but nothing was like, you know, crazy. Nothing was off the wall, you know? And we go there the second day and we're doing our typical filming stuff and B-roll and drone shots and all that kind of stuff for the documentary. And I posted a picture to Facebook. And it was just of me holding a camera inside the Conjuring house. And that was became my profile picture on Facebook for a while. And that comes into play because later on when we started the investigation, there's four of us total there. We sent two inside while me and my other friend Jake sat outside waiting for them to finish that. And then we'd cycle through and we'd go in. So I'm sitting out there in the car. At this point, I'm not sure what time it was. It was probably 10, 11 o'clock at night. And out of the blue on Facebook, I get a message from Beth Moore, who I was talking about earlier, the psychic medium from Ghost Hunts USA. And I know I 100% believe in her. She's very talented. I've seen it on several occasions. And she sent me a message replying to the picture that I posted of me in the house. And she said that she got a feeling looking at that picture that she needs so much so that she needed to send me this message. And this message said that, first of all, she described the layout of the house inside. And the reason I said earlier why we couldn't film our walkthrough, why that was important, was that at that time, the house itself was under contract with, I don't know if it was Travel Channel or some other media group that did not want room-to-room filming in the house. They didn't want people to see the entire layout of the house. So everything we filmed at that point, since it wasn't on TV or with that media network or whatever, we could not film room-to-room. So we kind of had to jump around and work around that. She had never been to the Conjuring house. Beth Moore, she'd never been there, never seen the full layout like that. And I was sitting there and this message says, you walk in and there's a brick fireplace on the left side. Something like this, I'm paraphrasing. It was a pretty long message. There's a brick fireplace when you walk inside and you walk in and to the right, there's a room with floor to ceiling bookshelves. And she named this perfectly. And she said that there was a little girl there who needed to give me a message personally. But there was an older male spirit that was keeping her mouth shut, wasn't letting her speak. And that night before this message happened, we were receiving voices from a little girl saying basically that she wasn't able to talk and that it wasn't possible for her to speak or whatever. And we didn't really know what those meant, you know, in real time until this message hit. And she said, you need to do whatever you can to get this male spirit away from this girl so she can leave you a message. And so that's what we tried to do. And we did something that I've never done before, never done since, and I don't condone it at all. We did do a little bit of provocation based on her message. Because she said, if you have to provoke, then go ahead and do that because she has to get you this message. And we did. And things kind of hit the fan from there. We did get a message from a female voice that said she died in the cellar with a man. And it was in this time, this thing was getting, you could feel the tension in the air was so different. And out of nowhere, my friend Jake, he goes, I got a nasty pain on my back right now. And we go over and we lifted up his shirt, and he had this welt that was in the shape of a triangle, which is the exact shape of the Conjuring House property line that was embedded on his back. And at that, we've never been attacked. Nobody in my team's ever been attacked. I've never been attacked at this point. So we started like, okay, what do we do? We talked to Corey, who was on site there, and then talked to Beth on the phone. We called her. The second my friend Jake stepped out of that house, the welt completely disappeared. Just dissolved right off his back, basically. Because it was gone within there as a red welt, and then within 5-10 minutes, it was gone. And what Beth said was that it was marking him, and it had with intentions to do something malicious. And at that point, we're like, okay, again, like I said earlier, that's, you know, way above my pay grade, way over my head. We're just gonna call it a night. And for the first time ever, it was like 1 o'clock in the morning at this point, we're like, we're gonna leave. And we're going to end an investigation early, and we're not staying in this house. But as I said earlier, with our car problem, we were now in the middle of Rhode Island in January with a gigantic snowstorm, and the tire was going flat on his car. We had no way to leave, no way to leave. And what happened off camera is that we did end up staying in the house, and we slept there, and trying to sleep in there was the worst night of sleep I've ever had in my life. Because whatever was there was messing with us. Our alarm clock went off at about 3:30 in the morning for no reason. It was an alarm clock that was already there that we slept by the night before. It didn't go off. It just started going off at 3-something in the morning. It was knocking on walls. It was walking around us. It was grabbing us. Like, it was, that house was pretty crazy. And I don't know, again, if we did something to piss it off. And again, to be clear, do not condone any sort of provocation. It's not something I'll ever do again. Not something I ever did since. But it was this very, just this one happened circumstance where we were kind of told to do this. So that was, ended up being the craziest investigation we had ever done. And like I said, if you want to go watch it, it's on YouTube, the full documentary. You can see all this is on camera, the message, everything.
Do you think there's any sort of inherent risk involved when investigating a location like this? I mean, is it a good idea that a place like the Conjuring House, you know, lets people kind of come in and investigate in their own style, in their own will? Because, I mean, there's all different types and theories and directions as what people will think is the best way to investigate a house. I mean, it was something like this that could potentially be dark. Is there risk involved if somebody goes in and does something very foolish? And I'm not saying that you did anything foolish, but I'm thinking, like, there's people who could do a lot darker things and worse things than what you did.
Right, exactly. I do. In fact, one house that we did was the Dollhouse, and we were the only group in India. It was a little house in Indiana. They had all these haunted dolls, and we were the only group to ever film there, because shortly after we left, there was a group that came there. You know, they seemed unassuming. They were just seemed like they were there for an investigation. And the owner, who I know very well, Chelsea, they were doing some very bad things in that house to try and make it extremely dark, like some sort of rituals or something. And she shut the place down. So she doesn't have investigations there anymore. I do think there's of course risks, especially just people. My opinion is that people suck in general. I have a lack of trust in a lot of people. So, but with Corey and Jennifer, they are very experienced investigators themselves. I think they are aware of the risk. Mm-hmm. I think if it's in the right hands like that, I think it's okay. Mm-hmm. But yes, like people, in fact, there's, to go off on another part about that, an investigation we recently did, which will be coming out shortly on YouTube, was Wilson Castle in Vermont. And the owners of there, they didn't get into it for any sort of paranormal reasons, this was passed down from several generations, this big, beautiful castle. And they had somebody who brought in a Dybbuk box. Mm-hmm. And they were like, oh, that's so cool. And I warned them. I was like, listen, you guys, this isn't paranormal, isn't your thing, but you do not want to turn this castle, which is a very loving, light place, one of the lightest places I've ever been, but super active, into something that's going to drive you out of here. Mm-hmm. So there is people who, if you don't understand that stuff, I think it's very dangerous. But in the Conjuring House specifically with Corey and Jennifer, I think it's in safe hands.
That wraps up part two of our conversation with Nolan Emerson about digging into the dead. A big thank you to him for joining us and sharing his experiences with us on the program. And thank you for supporting the show and keeping us on the air. Until next time, for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.